Hello, friends. We are about to continue our exploration of the egoic lotus, or really all the, at first, all the supplementary material and references we have to consider in order better to consider the egoic lotus. But as I go along, of course, I will be saying saying things about the lotus, and I'll try to bring it all together when I start speaking of the lotus specifically. Right now, we've been talking about the 10 different phases of human development. How did DK put this? Different kinds of souls, you know? Not only the five groups of souls, but let's see what we have here. groupings that of the entire human family, all those groupings within the radius of the human family. Now, I worked before on group number 6. Let's review the groups we've had. I just have to remember them. Well, you know, there were the atavistic group, a very small group of the least developed human beings. Then there were the what I can only call the early Lemurians. And both of these groups were very physically focused and, in my view, were not the beneficiaries of the implantation of the spark of mind, though they did have their mental unit fanned to sufficient intensity to cause a type of individualization. Then the third group were those with a very shallow wish life. The desire body was becoming rampant, and the desires were mostly physically focused. All of these are, in a sense, Lemurians. The third group does not quite reach the category of the true Atlanteans, which is the fourth group, and is quite a large group in the world, and is consisting, let's see here, a very chamic group. There's a lot to be said here. Let's see, here it is. Should be number 4. Yeah, primarily emotional. Without much mind nature, it can be swung into activity and they can be taught to use the mind. And in this Atlantean group, the physical body is steadily slipping into the realm of the unconscious. So that differentiates them from the third group with its very physicalized desires and its shallow wish life and its lack of control. So there are millions of such in this Atlantean group, the modern Atlanteans. Then the fifth group is interesting because the bulk of humanity are found there. They can be classed as intelligent human beings, capable of mental application if trained, and showing that they can think when need arises. However, they are still considered predominantly emotional, and the sheep of the human family who are easily regimented. But they do have that intelligence, and that does tell us that they are working in the third pedal, which is a mental pedal, albeit in the hall of ignorance, but still a mental pedal. The feeling nature here for them is almost overdeveloped, but they do have intelligence. So what we need here is, the nice, good people, it says, who are nevertheless largely controlled by the mass consciousness. Largely, but not exclusively, because interludes of the Leonian energy, which carries a lot of this fifth ray and the ability to think for oneself, those interludes do take over from time to time. However much they may be easily regimented. Please excuse all my different colors. I guess my fourth ray is showing. I have another friend who has a strong fourth ray, and somehow what I used to do and what he still does is sort of like to hold four different colored pens in your hand and then while taking notes or while writing down one's thoughts to switch the colors, hopefully with some sense. In this particular case, the colors, except for the green color here, represent different thoughts that were emerging in the different classes that I've taught on this subject. Then we went to the sixth group. And the sixth group really consisted of thinkers. They are minds. They are gaining in power, but there's still a smaller number than in the fifth group, which holds the bulk. And they are the product of our modern educational processes and scientific discoveries, and they are the cream of the human family. I wondered, you know, how big a layer in a glass of natural milk the cream consists. And some people said 1/7, and maybe it's not exactly that, but you get the idea, and you've all seen it in milk that's come from a cow, how big the layer of cream is. It's not the biggest by any means, of course. But they are achieving success, and they can be, they are achieving by the end of this phase real creativity, and they do move into the stage of aspiration. And all of this shows that they are working in the fifth petal, especially if they do become aspirants, because toward the latter part of the development of the fifth petal, aspiration does enter. And so they begin to have altruistic motives here, but, you know, are still tinged with selfishness, as are even those who are working within the sixth petal. But they are more than the nice good people who are easily regimented in group number five. I think it's very important that we try to understand these different groups, because we are surrounded by them constantly, and the problems of any government or world leader is how to deal with the very different demands of these different groups, which are not necessarily in harmony with each other at all. Well, anyway, I am asking here, do we need a group between five and six, consisting of those who are more purely mental without being necessarily creative? Well, of course, the Tibetan has given this to us as he sees it, and we're not going to try to impose or place here something that he does not see, because obviously he sees it. But there seems to be quite a jump between group five and six. Although group five is intelligent, it is still largely emotional. Group five is intelligent, but still largely emotional. Group six is not only intelligent, but creative in its intelligence. Perhaps we could say that there is work going on here in the fifth petal for group five. It is a creative petal, and these are creative, in group six, these are creative people. Maybe they don't start out that way. Maybe they start out with the ability simply to think. And they may, in the beginning, be selfish. Even selfishness can extend into the period of the first and second initiation, when there's work being done in the petals of sacrifice. So, this particular grouping of 10, and then the stages of adaptation, which we will study after that from Esoteric Psychology 1, which is a grouping of 8, maybe together will cover the types of human beings there are presently upon our planet. With the concrete mind, you know, it kind of wants to make these rigid categories, but there's always an overflow between different ways of perceiving. So I rushed a little bit through group six and the last time we spoke, and they are definitely advanced human beings. And Some may think they are beyond the law, and they really nurture the lower ego in this pedal. I mean, thinking is power, and before they really turn to altruism, they oftentimes have to crash. And we will learn later that the fifth pedal is indeed a time when crashing occurs and people become disillusioned. So much goes on. I mean, the beginning of fifth pedal work is very selfish. Then comes the disillusionment. Then comes the aspiration. And at length, with the full unfoldment of the fifth pedal, probably while working in the seventh, or working at some of the things the seventh represents, comes the full unfoldment of the fifth pedal and the first initiation. So anyway, success is here, and we know how often the idea of success is associated with Leo. Leo is the associated to be associated by one method of counting with this fifth pedal. So they are in the front ranks of human beings. The factor of they at least they work for the benefit of the human family. How much the factor of sacrifice is coming in, well, that may be debated. It's certainly possible to work for the benefit of the human family without applying a lot of sacrifice. But in stage number 7, which I think correlates quite well with the sixth pedal, the factor of sacrifice does begin to enter. I call it a Virgo pedal, although every, you know, the span of the work in any of these pedals is so long that all kinds of astrological signs will be involved. It's just that they will be involved in such a way that they promote the particular kind of development of the pedal to which they are applied. But in a generic sort of sense, once we step into the sixth pedal, it is the sixth sign, and from one way of counting can be correlated with Virgo. And we all know that Virgo is very different from Leo. You know the old joke, Leo throws the party and Virgo cleans it up. So there is the self-critique begins to enter. And and when we enter group number 7, we begin to read here that those souls whose sense of awareness on the physical plane, they brought it all the way through into the brain, right, is now of such an order that they can pass on to the probationary path. Now, let's just say this is not the same in this grouping of types as the path of aspiration. The probationary path shows you're willing to be tested. The path of aspiration simply means you're aiming at higher things, and one way or another, you want the higher life, but your willingness to subject yourself to real discipline, such as is found in relation to Virgo, is not necessarily the same as when you're truly on the path of probation. The probationary path, I think we can say, still begins before the first initiation occurs. And really, when dealing with the first initiation work, or the touching of the rod of initiation, or the influencing by the rod of initiation of the sacrifice petals has to be occurring. So they can pass on to the path of testing. Probation is a form of testing. Now, the first initiation is beginning earlier, really, earlier than accepted discipleship, but later than this path of probation, and certainly later than the path of aspiration. So many references here are going to be placing the path of probation before the first initiation. One can be working in the sixth pedal and the seventh pedal, and meanwhile have the first, the fifth pedal unfolding, which means that the first initiation is on its way. And some type of unselfishness is going to be cultivated in that sixth pedal. But you're always working ahead of where the real unfoldment is occurring. So the unfoldment is oftentimes the result of what you do on tasks which are more difficult than where the unfoldment is occurring. So that when you're working away in the sixth pedal and the seventh, unfoldment of the fifth can be expected. The path of probation. Well, shall we say that some of the work in the later fifth petal or some of the unfoldment will indicate the probationary path? Because if the first initiation is indicated with the complete unfoldment of the fifth petal, and if the path of probation begins before the first initiation, then the path of probation has to have some fifth petal connection. So some of the later fifth petal can be included in this path of probation. So what we have here on this path of probation is preliminary discipleship, or at least a high grade of conscious aspiration. But I say the willingness to improve oneself and to submit oneself to the testing which the higher power, the higher of the pairs of opposites, found within the love petals, in which that higher of the pairs of opposites is the judge and is involved. These people working in the fifth petal and the sixth petal, they certainly do have that sense of the higher of the pairs of opposites. Therefore, DK can say they are the mystics, and this is the question of whether they are yet the practical mystics. They are the mystics conscious of duality, and let us say, first of all, within themselves. In other words, a kind of a higher self and a lower self, higher tendencies and lower tendencies, torn between the pairs of opposites. And this tearing process obviously involves the Ray 4. It's the rending process, and it's particularly what happens to the human being once they begin to be aware of more than their elemental life. They're struggling in one direction to be better, and yet something is pulling them back, hence the tearing. So this seventh group, going beyond simply the creative thinkers, they are coming more in touch with divinity. Let's say they are the mystics, and I just want to put that in here. More in touch with divinity than those in group six. And then, of course, in order to do this right, I have to make it green, don't I? I will. All right. Okay. There it is. Okay, more in touch with divinity than those in group six. So, will they be equally as creative? Well, maybe, or maybe not. And they are beginning to be associated with petal number six, even though it's the seventh group. So they're conscious of duality. I'm reading the black, which is the Tibetan stuff, torn between the pairs of opposites. And we saw that a lot of rending process did occur also in the fifth petal, but who are yet unable to rest until they are polarized in the soul. So they are driven by that which is within. And this means also by the solar angel, because it is at the fifth petal, which covers such a wide range of development, that the solar angel becomes the downward-looking, downward-gazing soul, and really takes an interest in that struggling extension of itself, the lower man. And so the influences of the solar angel are contributing to this inability to rest until there is a real identification as the soul, until the man realizes that he actually is the soul. So it's not only his aspiration is fed by the downward directed energy streams of the soul on a higher level. So the restlessness is caused by aspiration and a high desire stimulated from within himself and also from deeper within himself by the solar angel. So this is in a sense somewhat characteristic of the first degree. But and in a certain sense, probationers, well, it's the first degree initiates can still be called probationers, because there is one sense in which the path of probation lasts all the way until accepted discipleship, which is not going to occur before the middle period between the first and second initiation, which is a long period. How do I spell this thing? Characteristic. Okay. So what that means is that one can be, in a way, a first-degree initiate and still, from one perspective, a probationer. In other words, if we accept the idea that only at the point of accepted discipleship does the stage of probationary disciple end. So these are the sensitive, struggling people. Well, you know, every one of those has kind of an astrological meaning, and we can understand the, how the Neptune and the fourth ray and the sixth ray come into this process, who long for release from failure, because they have been repeatedly defeated by their elemental nature. Even as St. Paul, who was a higher type of initiate, felt that he was defeated when he exclaimed that that which I would do, I do not do, and that which I would not do, that I do. O wretched man that I am, who can save me from the body of this death? That sounds, you know, a lot of Ray 6 and Ray 4 there with him and the Scorpio struggle. So was he a mystic? Well, he was more than that, of course. He was a pretty highly developed soul and was at a certain point taking the second initiation, then onto the third and probably the fourth. These are the sensitive, struggling people. We can say that those who were in group number 6 and who were the thinkers and the artists and the artisans and the skilled workers and all that, they may have been quite happy exercising the mind in some creative way and were not yet longing for release from the more familiar life. These are the sensitive, struggling people who long for release from failure and from existence in the world today. And we do see this very Neptunian tendency of the mystic, something is better on the other side, paradise, heaven, whatever. And there are other ways of finding release as well, through the arts and through religion and through poetry, through drugs. There are all kinds of ways of finding release. But the world is too much with them, and they are not yet the occult workers and practical mystics who are right down there in everyday experience bringing heaven to earth. But they still are raising humanity just the way the group before them, group 6, did. So they long for release from the from existence in the world today. So they long for release from pain, through their aspiration, through being guided by the various teachers. I wonder if we could call this the New Age pedal. You know, the sort of, this is my last incarnation pedal, or this is my last incarnation group. We've all seen that. It oftentimes accompanies the sign Pisces, and interestingly, this would be a kind of a Virgo pedal. But at the same time, I'll get into that more. It is associated with the sign Pisces as well. Virgo and Pisces, so much second and sixth rays, so longing for everything to be pure and perfect, and maybe not yet wanting to get their hands dirty in the corrective methods. But, you know, if these little pegs, like the New Age group, seem to help us get an idea of what's going on here, well, then so much the better. But, of course, they don't describe everybody here. So we would say that the true disciple would not long for escape. The normal world is no longer the field of experience, even to be fled. It is the field of service. So they have a much more Saturn and Mercury and much more will to work within the illusion and less desire to be relieved from their pain. The mind natures are alive and active, and such was the case with group number 6. let's just say that some of these mental natures are excited by every spiritual possibility, every religious possibility, excited by the prospect of attaining something higher than familiar experience. They are really, there's some kind of apotheosis that is reached in the, maybe we can call it the sixth group or the fifth petal, and as a personality, one becomes, what word does DK use? Oh, I wish I could think. I almost had it. It was like, it wasn't catastrophic, it wasn't cataclysmic, it wasn't mighty, but it was like mighty, you know, it was formidable, and we'll come to it. Colossal was the word. Colossal. Well, that means quite large, right? And the colossal era of architecture and of building. So he becomes mentally colossal, I think, you know, in the fifth petal and in the sixth group. But here already there are well-applied critiques of oneself, and the consciousness is oriented towards something higher, and then comes the realization that in order to achieve that something higher, one really has to work meticulously, there's a good Virgo word, work meticulously upon oneself. But they cannot yet, their mind nature alive and active, but they cannot yet control them as they should. So what does that mean? You know, we could say that, hence, they are not the full disciple who really has control of the mind. How we have come to think of disciples is that they really are mentally focused more than astrally focused. I suppose a lot depends on the ray. So we've often seen in the mystic types that the mind may be alive and active, but it is not yet the truly controlling mechanism, controlling all the energies which have arisen in this phase, the aspirational energies. And these minds can get carried away. They're not yet level-headed. They're not yet practical. They cannot yet control them as they should. And the higher illumination, you know, which is going to be achieved more at the third degree and beyond, remains as yet a joyous hope. You know, this is the mystical language and final possibility, but of course it's not final at all. They're working in what we call the higher solar plexus center. They think that perhaps what will be given to me or given to them will illumine them, but they are a bit too worked up, a bit too frenzied, you know, when you get Neptune and Mars going together, to have common sense spirituality. So these people have touched the soul and are overstimulated, perhaps, but not yet disciplically controlled. I think that's a good word. Is it spelled correctly? Well, maybe close enough. Okay. Disciplically, yes. So this can be a path of separation. One of our very good thinkers, Daryl, offered this. It can be a path of separation for them, and they can become sectarian and think there's only one way to go. So it is more the mystical path than the path of occultism. And can we say that this group begins to move from mysticism to occultism? Well, it will depend upon the ray to a very great extent. Maybe, you know, we cannot generalize, and what we are associated in the Tibetan's teaching mostly with people along the 2-4-6 line and some of the first ray line and so forth. When it comes to the fifth ray, the third ray, even the seventh ray, some of the methods used may be less familiar to us than the ones that we are habitually encountering with the people that we know. So anyway, they are on the path of probation. They are the mystics. They are being tested. They are willing to submit to certain disciplines, but not sufficient disciplines to make of them the true disciple. And I'm sure we all know people like that. You know, look at the transition. Here we are representing the Alice Bailey work, the Blavatsky work, the Agni Yoga work. Look at the people who come as mystics to this work. It's a bit demanding for them at times, is it not? And they may not want to submit to the mental disciplines, even though their minds are alive, active, and awake. They are longing to be somewhere else, to be in some higher or other state, and they are not necessarily willing to do the nitty-gritty kind of work. Well, and then they have to be helped to make that transition into realizing that the mind is not necessarily the slayer of the real, but can be, in fact, the revealer of the real. I mean, there are all different kinds of minds, aren't there? And so, you know, some people say, well, I've gotten rid of my mind. Well, then why has not the planetary logos got rid of his mind? Why has not the solar logos got rid of his mind? You see, it's not that we can throw mind away. It's just that there's all different kinds of mental apprehension of different depths and scope, and we have to know where in the mind we are working, because it is certainly an instrument of revelation, an instrument of illumination, as long as it does not overly concretize what is the real. Well, I think one of our members said here about this phase, there was lots of yeast. Yeast rises, right? And sugar to feed it. Well, that which is pleasant. There's a lot here about striving after that which is wonderful, beautiful, high, enticing, attractive, pleasant. But then, you know, if you're a true probationer, which some of these people are, you will start to be willing to submit yourself to tests, or to be submitted to tests, probation. That's what it is. So any one of these groups is not just a monolithic group with people all of exactly the same type. There's a beginning, middle, and end to every type of group, and the beginning is making a transition from the group before, and the end is making a transition into the group following. Okay, well, I hope that's reasonably clear. Now we look at the next one, and it's group 8. We finally made it to page 207. Goodness. Okay. Souls whose intelligence and love nature is becoming so awakened and integrated, the planet Venus is here. So in other words, it's really Mercury and Venus, and the factor of integration is operative, is becoming so awakened and integrated that they can begin to tread the path of discipleship. Notice the word begin is there. This is not a climaxing phase, but it certainly does represent control by the loving, illuminated mind. And we also have the idea here that mind and emotion, or mind and love, maybe better mind and love, are uniting as they can. So this is the soft line and the hard line uniting, integrated in these people. So these are disciples, and they are practical mystics. And this does not really happen until the first initiation. They are actually beginning to enter into the hall of wisdom. You know how the egoic lotus goes: at first, the first tier of petals, hall of ignorance; second tier of petals, hall of learning; and the third tier of petals, at least the beginning of the hall of wisdom, but that hall continues for a long time. And at some point, DK talks about the hall of life, something like that. And the idea there is, of course, the egoic lotus would be gone entirely, and one would be entering into the first aspect of divinity. So it's at the first degree that the real path of discipleship begins. And sometimes DK has said that every true aspirant or real aspirant is an initiate of the first degree. See how those terms kind of overlap, so it's difficult to make them cut and dried and to have definite boundaries. There's a certain fluidity here. So we've moved from the stage of mysticism, in which the mind may be awake and alive, but is not necessarily accurate, does not necessarily delineate things how they are, into the stage of discipleship where there's a lot of that Mercury and Saturn quality which makes for accuracy of mind. So the mental permanent atom, well, okay, yes, certainly the mental unit is much exercised and is becoming responsive to higher influences. I'm not sure what this says. The path of probation begins. Path. Permanent atom. That may be just a mistake. Anyway, the path of probation begins a little before the first degree. The path of discipleship at the first degree, although I've already explained that sometimes from a certain perspective, the path of probation does not end until accepted discipleship really begins. So these are the practical mystics. Was group 7 practical? Not so much, even though there was the need for a growing type of practicality because they were at least beginning a serious self-critique. They are the practical mystics or occultists. He kind of equates those two ideas. If you're in occultism, it has the foundation of mysticism. But it's a practical mysticism which makes it possible for you to become an occultist, meaning that all of your wonderful perceptions can somehow be applied in this elemental world. These are the practical mystics or occultists of modern times. Real discipleship at the first degree, and you're still being tested, but you're not being tested to see whether you can be a disciple. You're being tested in higher ways. Later, the true disciple becomes the accepted disciple. But when you've taken the first degree, it is legitimate to call such a person a disciple. They may be, from the higher point of view, still on probation, but they are a disciple. Here I'm speaking from the higher point of view. Until there is acceptance, at least onto the periphery of an ashram, there's no real discipleship. But let's just say, at this stage, there certainly can be pledged discipleship, where you make a promise and you keep it, and you use the will aspect of the mind to help you keep that promise. So the real discipleship, we can say, begins at accepted discipleship, but from a certain perspective, you can call an initiate of the first degree a disciple, even though from a higher perspective they're still on probation. And here I'm bringing up the idea of the 7 head centers, which are opening up all the way to the third degree, and that is what is going to give us the true disciple. So spiritually, there is much less wishful thinking. And when we talk about wishful thinking, realize that this is like Mercury and Neptune together. Neptune provides the wishes, and Mercury provides the thinking, so it can be a bit of a glamorized state. And here, in group 8, there's much less wishful thinking than in group number 7. So all the wild hopes are gone. And this was written down before, but, here we are 2 years later. I wonder how many ascended in the year 2012. There was so much wishful thinking involved with the end of the Mayan calendar and so forth. The end of the Mayan calendar as understood by some and not necessarily by the Mayans themselves. So that the exaggerated ascension, which was to occur in 2012, I do not think occurred. But let's just say there may have been some who greatly benefited from that period, and inwardly, who is to know? Let's just say that to be a disciple, there's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of sacrifice involved here. These disciples are working in the 7th and the 8th and even the 9th petal. The true disciple has had that touch of the rod of initiation by the bodhisattva. involving the seventh petal. At least those petals are opened not only through the abnormal and strenuous labor of the disciple, but through the some application of the rod of power by the Bodhisattva first and then by the Lord of the world himself. So there is practicality here and entry into the stage of initiation. And when we look at Capricorn, which is, well, the major sign signifying initiation, we see it's an earth sign, a cardinal sign, and what a practical sign it is. It realizes, it's those born in and under it realize how much you have to be working in the world in order to really achieve. So this particular group number eight, earlier discipleship, but real discipleship, and involves work in the seventh, eighth, and the eventually the ninth petal, but that's coming up a bit more. When we look at the next group. Well, the hiccups now seem to be gone. Okay. Little pause here. And of course, there are just so many things to correlate. We remember that Master D.K. talked in his book, Esoteric Astrology, about the tremendous amount of correlation that had to be accomplished. And, I guess I'm one of those correlators. I mean, there are many correlators that are going to have to be at work to make sense out of the whole thing. But, you know, since I have Mercury on the top of the chart, conjunct the midheaven, it's that particular planet which operates in terms of correlation. So I'm always eager to show how this relates to that and everything relates to everything. And then out of it all, try to get that Jupiterian sense of the wholeness. But it, you know, takes a lot of work with the itty-bitty stuff at first in order for that sense of wholeness to emerge in articulated detail. The unarticulated wholeness, I think, can emerge, but the articulated wholeness is takes a lot of labor to achieve, and maybe ultimately even the unarticulated wholeness cannot really emerge properly until all of the labor has been accomplished. So we look at group nine. The souls who are initiate into the mysteries of the kingdom of God. Well, okay, I don't... They're initiate into the mysteries of the kingdom of God. The earlier group was the disciples, okay. And their love nature is becoming awakened and integrated with their mind nature, and they can begin to tread the path of discipleship. They're practical mystics. Look, when we talk here about the mysteries of the kingdom of God, we have to remember that some initiates, some initiates are what's called probationary initiates. Well, they're not real initiates in terms of how the hierarchy sees it, but they are initiates of the first and second degree. And so you kind of wonder here whether this group includes initiates of the first or second degree, or whether it should be included in this other group of true disciples, group number eight. When are the mysteries truly revealed? Well, they are revealed progressively from the first degree to the second degree and on to the third, but it's really at the third degree that there is the revelation of the true mystery of oneness, of the unifying factor. So these are souls who are not only conscious of their vehicles of expression. Increasingly, one becomes a psychologist in relation to one's own vehicles and the vehicles of others, the integrated personality. Remember that the truly integrated personality doesn't really appear until the third degree. Soul-infused personality. Perhaps ultimate soul infusion doesn't occur until the fourth degree. And that's a very strange thought, isn't it? But anyway, the majorly integrated personalities are coming in at the third degree. So they're not only conscious of their vehicles of expression and conscious also of themselves as souls, maybe not only as souls in incarnation, but as souls on the higher planes of light, love, and power, at least on the higher mental plane. But and this is the distinguishing factor. But they know, past all controversy, that there is no such thing as my soul and your soul, but simply the soul. Well, you know how the rule 5 goes in the rays and the initiations, and it basically says, let the group, let's see, perceive the triad shining forth. I'm going to actually go here so you can see that, so I can get all of this back to where it belongs. Here it is, Rule 5. Let the group perceive the triad shining forth, dimming the light of the soul, and blotting out the light of form. The macrocosmic whole is all there is. And then this is the sentence that is related to what is just being said in the foregoing. Let the group perceive that whole, and then no longer use the thought, my soul and thine. So that's the third degree. In the particular case we were discussing it here with the advanced rules, it's the third degree of the group itself. But when it comes to the individual to know that there is no, and past all controversy, not sometimes yes, sometimes no, you know, it's not just on a good day, it's all the time, past all controversy, there is no my soul and thy soul, but simply the soul. They know this not only as a mental proposition, as oftentimes probationary initiates of the first and second degree know it, and as a sensed reality dimly sensed as through a glass darkly, but also as a fact in their own consciousness. They can assert the fact with respect to this realization, there is no such thing as my soul and thy soul, but only the soul. This is all third degree. All 9 petals have been unfolded, but not all 12, even though there is unfoldment of the synthesis petals at every one of the major initiations, 1 through 5. I'm calling 1 through 5 major. From a certain perspective, they are. They are the monastic, great monastic initiations. So there is a continuity of soul consciousness for this 9th group. Kind of interesting, because 9 represents completion in a way, and the egoic lotus, from one point of view, in terms of its 9-ness, is completed. They have been to the mountain, you know, as Martin Luther King said of himself. They are global elders, and, you know, the second degree types might really begin to have all this realization occurring from time to time, but the third degree has it with continuity. They are the world disciples, and they are bypassing conventionality, conventional perspectives, nationalisms. They are regimented thinking, that which one is told to think. They are far beyond mass consciousness. They are creative thinkers. They have incorporated the mystical stage of perceived oneness, and they have been working disciples, and now they are world disciples. So I think we can say with fair accuracy that not so many of us, you know, who are they, when the Dalai Lama himself is probably at this stage, or Alice Bailey, or Albert Schweitzer, or maybe Nelson Mandela, only maybe, but perhaps Bishop Tutu, perhaps. When such people are at this stage, and they are initiated into the mysteries of the kingdom of God, the great mystery being identity, our identicality, or the sameness of all beings, then who are we to say that we have reached this stage? But we will have flashes, and we will have realizations that this stage does exist, and our job is to create continuity. Okay. That's group number 9. The souls who are initiate into the mysteries of the kingdom of God. And this is something we're all striving for. And D.K. said that it would not be so many, not be so long as the Master's count time before we, and by we I mean such as were in his groups of nine and his group of 24, before we would be experiencing this stage. And then group 10, it's a one, it's power. Very interestingly, at the fifth initiation, it is the first ray which is expressing itself. Just check out page 340 of the rays and initiation. Initiations and all the rays are given there. Okay, so these are the souls, and notice he still calls them souls, even though they don't have a causal body. From a certain perspective, even when you're a monad, you can be called a soul. A soul is a being with consciousness, okay, and oftentimes soul represents the consciousness that that being has. It's not necessarily confined to the causal body. This is really important. The protean nature of the term soul, and that we should not confine it simply to the type of consciousness which exists upon the higher mental plane when we say the soul, or even the solar angel. Soul is cosmic. It is the consciousness of the one universal logoic being which we essentially are. That is what soul is. But then there are all these different classifications of it as we descend down the ladder of prakritic density, or the density of matter. And the denser the enfoldment around the soul, so to speak, then the more that soul is contained, and the more that soul is related to form and is preoccupied with form. So anyway, the souls who have achieved release from all the limitations of form nature, and notice, the causal body is a form and represents a limitation. It is the sheath of the true soul. Well, the true soul, what is it? But, you know, the spiritual triad is a truer ego or truer soul than that which is found in the causal body. So there's a great release of consciousness when the being, the unit of being consciousness rises out of the containment of the causal body through the destruction of that causal body. So the souls who have achieved release from all the limitations of form nature, certain from the personality and even from the causal body, and who dwell eternally, having overcome some of the major illusions of time, in the consciousness of the one soul which is universal and is not confined to our planet or solar system or cosmic logos or supercosmic logos or galaxy or any of that. It is utterly universal. Withdrawn from identification with any aspiration of the form life. The form life wants this and that. The mind wants this. The astral body wants that. The physical etheric body wants this and the other. Well, they may want those things, but they've been so trained now and that they no longer are striving in those directions because they have become impressed and drawn into the higher being. And the consciousness of this higher being which we are is no longer identified with those tendencies of the lower vehicles, even though the tendencies are now much reduced. So withdrawn from identification with any aspiration of the form life, no matter how highly developed, even a highly developed form. Oftentimes DK says, look, even though you're a high-grade personality, you will be meditating as a personality unless you meditate as a soul. And he says, what's not acceptable in this meditation is that you meditate as a personality at all. You have to meditate as a soul. So that requires a change of identification. They can and do use the form. Well, you know, and the form that they may use if they are masters of the wisdom, which are pretty much what these types are. But even for the fourth degree, you can create a Maya Virupa. So the form that they may use may be a Maya Virupa, a vehicle of Maya or a vehicle of the imagination, molded pretty much, we are told, on the vehicle that one had at the fifth degree. Interesting. They can and do use the form at will for the purposes of the general good. I so remember what Master Moria said, who's ever for the common weal or the general good, the common weal, the general good, is with us. And I've found it to be the case. When I turn my mind to the general good, I immediately feel the something of the vibration of the great ones. He spoke, well, he always will, but he spoke the truth there. A definite, impressive truth. So they can and do use the form at will for the purposes of the general good. These are the masters of life. Well, they're certainly masters of the lower three worlds, or of life in the lower three worlds. They are the perfected adepts. So they're not just the arhats, they're actually the adepts. So you kind of think that even the initiate of the fourth degree can be found in group number 9, at the end of the development of group number 9. And these will be found in group 10, the true masters. Well, at one point here I said beginning with the fourth degree and including the fifth. But in a sense, let's just say those who are beyond the structure of the egoic lotus. What does it say here? Well, you know, that's a question. Shall we put the fourth degree at the end of group number 9 or at the beginning of group number 10 or both? But perfected adepts are initiates of the fifth degree. So, in a way, shall we say, more likely to be initiates of the fifth degree. The true masters, he says masters of life, but, you know, really to be a master of life in the ultimate sense of the word, one would have to be more than a master of the wisdom who can control all things within the lower three worlds. One would have to, I don't know what, control the entire cosmic physical plane or beyond. But anyway, the term holds. So this is the tenth group. Well, we are not in that group. You know, there's some people who say they are, and, well, no. Even DK would not claim himself to be a master of the wisdom, and only because Alice Bailey made an error and included his name at the end of a sending where he signed himself as the Master DK, did that leak out. He would have simply said that he was a high, relatively high initiate, and he was not going to go claiming anything for himself. So if a master is not going to right off the bat claim mastership, then why are we of much lesser capacity, some of us, claiming mastership? You know, it's just a lack of proportion, isn't it? All right, so we've gone through all the 10, haven't we? And 10 groups. And I find this to be a most useful tenfold categorization. Higher than this, and one can go higher, we need not go except by inference. A detailed analysis is not, however, in order, owing to the limitations of men's minds. So we're not going to discuss what Chohans do, and Chohans of the seventh initiation, and initiates of the eighth and ninth degree that are just slightly hinted at. The above, says DK, is only a wide generalization, and the various groupings shade into each other in a bewildering way. And that's what any of us who have really thought about this have discovered. You know, you just cannot make it utterly delineated, cut and dried. Oop, hiccups again. And so there are overlapping phases here, and we may think of ourselves and find ourselves in more than one group. And I think it's a very good thing to try to place yourself, not with any sense of enlarging the lower ego or becoming self-centered, but just to be factual about it, you know. Where do I stand? What do I have to do? We are working across a span of activities. And you notice there is that bell-shaped curve thing. And maybe part of us is found on the lower level, part of us in the very center, maybe the majority, and part of us reaching on ahead. So we may be working in various petals, or the things that we do may affect various petals and be representative of various groups. Well, okay, then this will be the, I'll put it in red in a minute. Well, why don't I just put it in red? This will be the end of the egoic lotus webinar commentaries, number 4, EP 2, page 207, and program 4. And we'll start out here probably on the stages of adaptation, beginning on Egoic Lotus webinar commentaries number 5. So, of Egoic Lotus webinar commentaries 5, and we'll go to EP 1 and page 300 something. We'll get to that. All right, friends, this will just be an hour-long program, and that's fine with me. We'll continue, review this. It's really worth your while to get the sense of these 10 groups so that when you look out upon humanity and you see the various struggles of people that in their life, you can pretty well discover what it is that is motivating them, what the nature of their desire is, and within what range they are largely focused. Not that you want to confine them to that range. You always want them to move forward, of course, but realism, realism is the key. I guess we can be differentially realistic, you know, realistic about different things, but in this case, psychological, psycho-spiritual realism is really important. Okay, we'll see you soon.